A few weeks ago, when Franklin and Stefan were here, I was talking about my health and I was worried about my big tummy, and I explained that that because I write, which is such a consuming job, that all writers tend to end up grazing, going to the fridge, and just a bad habit. And I'm having trouble shaking that habit, or I have had trouble shaking that habit. And also, I just absolutely drive myself all the time because, as I've explained, when you realise that you can deal with this forbidden subject of the human condition, this off-limits subject, and from there make amazingly precious insights, the responsibility is just enormous. While we haven't sort of acknowledged it about Darwin, he was also an unresigned thinker who was able to think truthfully. That's how he came up with the idea of natural selection. And he also suffered from this massive responsibility, and he also suffered from chronic fatigue. In fact, at one stage they're going to call chronic fatigue the Darwin syndrome a few years ago. But anyway, so I've had this problem with my tummy, and I've been trying to beat it. Well, what I want to tell you about is this device called tapping, which I've used, and it's made all the difference in the world. Now, I need to explain tapping. It's a very powerful tool. It's a similar tool to acupuncture, to scanner, and physio key, and all these things that are they're working on the body's meridians. Now, the human body, like all living things, is full of electricity, and there's all these pathways, the sort of main highways through the body of these energy pathways. They're called meridians, or in Chinese medicine, qi, and so on. But the body has got, the human body is just an electrical system, and that electrical system is organized into pathways, so these pathways run right through the body, and they run from the head down right through the arms, and then they run right through the body like this, and so now what happens is, when we live with stress and in the abnormal world, we the human condition, afflicted, distressed, upset, angry, egocentric, and alienated world that humans live in now, these highways become blocked. And so they get jammed up. So they get, see what the body does when it can't deal with something, it departmentalizes it. It just sort of parks it off to the side and leaves it because it can't deal with it. It can't resolve it. So in the end, the body looks like one big mass of blocks, and these are all and the body ends up hardly able to work. It's like the pipes in the body aren't flowing anymore. I mean, when I got chronic fatigue, part of my adrenals, which is something to do with the chronic fatigue, my body started splinting them, which means it started putting a muscle, a box of muscles around it to try to protect them. So it sort of departmentalized off to sort of protect them. In fact, when I had someone give me some massage once, she was very good at massage. Immediately she touched there, she said, "Gee whiz, you've got some real knot in there, sort of unresolved knot." In fact, she pushed so hard on it to try and work it out that she nearly twisted my rib cage and got sore for a long time. But that's, she was tapping into the splintered musculature around my adrenals that are trying to protect it. That's an example of how the body, when it can't deal with something, like the mind, when it can't deal with something, it has to park it off to the side, leaving it unresolved. And in fact, the body and the mind are obviously totally connected. And most sicknesses are psychosomatic; they're mind produced. And so the body, like the mind, ends up compartmentalizing, and the whole body gets locked up. And so nothing's working; it's all jammed up. And so clearly what you've got to do to try to get the body to work is to try to unlock these pathways and make them flow again. So everything can start unraveling and healing. And so that's the power of acupuncture. Acupuncture just hits these key points, these interfaces where the meridians are strongest, where they're running, where they interact, where they cross over, and it lets the energy out. It allows those tangles to be unlocked, and suddenly everything starts to flow and work, and you get an amazing healing effect. You come out of a good acupuncture session and you feel enormously relieved and calm and scanner and physio key, they're working on the same meridians, they're doing the same system, they're sending in very minute currents into the body which work on these knots and help unlock them, and so the system starts to work. Now, this tapping is incredibly powerful system, and it's doing the same thing. It's helping to unlock all this mess and tangle and let the body start to work, and once it can start working, then you can get some healing effect, you can get some therapy. And so what you're doing when you're tapping is you're actually, as I'll show you in a split second, you're tapping on these main points as it comes down here, as the meridians come down through here. And they're where the meridians are closest to the surface. So they're just under the eye, above the eye, above the lip, on the chin, on the chest bone there, and on the hip there, and the top of the head. Now, if you think about it, and you feel all these points, you're just almost tapping on the skull itself. So there's hardly any meat between the bone and the surface. So obviously the meridians are very, energy meridians are very close to the surface. So it's very effective points to touch on. And if you touch on them in association with your mind thinking about a subject, it's very powerful. It's absolutely extraordinarily powerful in unlocking those, assisting with those problems. Okay, so that's the basis of all these energy healing systems of acupuncture, scanner, physio key, so. What I want to just show you how much this tapping system worked for me, because I had this tummy problem and it's virtually gone, and that's only 2 weeks of tapping. So it's an incredibly powerful system. So what you do with tapping, I'll just give you a quick demonstration of what I did. So if you have this karate chop to start, and you say, even though I feel like eating when I'm tired, I deeply accept this habit and understand why I got into it. So you've got to be in a compassionate frame of mind, which I'll talk about much more about shortly. So you start with this compassionate statement: even though I feel like eating when I'm tired, I deeply accept this habit and understand why it got into happening, why it happened. I deeply accept myself. Okay, so once you've established that, then you can start tapping. So you say, in my case, this is the sequence of tapping you do. You start out here at the edge of the eyebrow, you say, so I'm saying, I feel like eating, I feel like eating, I feel like grazing, I feel like eating sugar, this habit of overeating when I'm tired. I feel hungry. I feel like eating. I feel like grazing. It's this habit I've got that I get when I'm overtired. So I feel like eating. and grazing. I feel like eating sugar. I'm overeating. I just need to rest. I start shifting a bit. I say, but I don't really need food because I can't digest it at my age anyway. I don't need to eat. My body is enormously relieved to not be eating. My body is enormously relieved not to be eating. I'm not feeling hungry. I don't need to eat. I'll be so relieved when I'm not eating. The system will be so relieved. I have been eating, I have been overeating, but I don't need to overeat anymore. My body's enormously relieved not to be overeating. I don't need to be eating food, overeating food. I don't really need to eat so much. I can stop grazing. I'm not really hungry. My body doesn't really need that excess food. And you keep doing that, right? Now, what happens after you do a session like that, you actually can feel whatever the problem is you're tapping on. You can tap on any feelings that are coming up or any concern or whatever, and it's astonishing how the whole body will respond, how your mind will calm down on those issues. You will be effective. And in fact, I lost. So when I was starting to get hungry through the day, I would start tapping. So now I only eat one small, reasonably small meal at lunchtime at 12 o'clock and one at 4 o'clock, and that's all. And I know a lot of people who are really thin only eat one meal a day when they're my sort of age. So this tapping has been the tool I needed to help me stop eating, because I just start tapping when I'm feeling hungry, and honestly, after it, I don't feel hungry. it's astonishing. This tap, look it up on Google. It's an amazingly effective device, tapping. It just seems to have this magic, almost magical effect because again, you're tapping right on those meridians. That's the points where they put the acupuncture needles, the same places, and it sort of opens a pathway into you. It's like a doorway. It's a really powerful tool. And it's going to, in the future, it's going to be very important, which is something that I'd now like to talk about. I want to talk about the use of tapping in particular, but other forms that I've mentioned of therapy. The value to humanity in as a whole. Now, in chapter 9 of Freedom, I explain that with understanding of the human condition, we've got the means now, the bridging understanding, to heal all our psychosis, because we can now reconcile the upset in ourselves. We can love ourselves from a basis of first principle biological understanding. So as Carl Jung was forever saying, wholeness for humans depends on the ability to own our own shadow being the dark, volcanic, angry, egocentric and alienated part of our being. So we needed to own our own shadow, be able to accept it and understand it, love it, bring compassion to our lives, and that is the basis for any psychiatry. Psych means soul, from the original Greek word meaning soul. Archery means healing, so psychiatry is the healing of our child within, our soul, right? So psychosis is a sort of distressed soul, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But in chapter 9, I explain that while we do have the means now to heal any therapy, because there's no condition of humanity, if you're a murderer or whatever, that you can't find the first principle, deeper understanding of, and bring compassion to it. And that compassion is what will heal it. It'll make you whole, as Jung said. Be able to understand the dark side of ourselves, make sense of that at last. But then I point out in chapter 9 that that healing process is a huge exercise that you can't really attempt in one lifetime. In fact, it'll take many lifetimes to heal the human race using this understanding that we now have. And that in the meantime, it makes sense that we can't try to heal ourselves completely. We can just leave all our upset in a suitcase behind is dealt with, because we know it is dealt with. It is all defended now and it's no longer needed. The upset that got us here, the angry, eccentric and alienated behavior that was necessary to cope with while we couldn't defend ourselves, they couldn't explain why we had to become so upset. That behavior is now finished with. The battle's won. We can all, as it were, leave the game, leave the football field, if you like, and go to the showers, because it's the battle's won. So there's no longer any legitimate need to continue that upsetting search for knowledge. So upset is now finished with. It's done, played its role. It's no longer valid. And so that's the whole point of chapter 9, explaining how we can leave that behind, transcend all our upset. So it's unresolved. It's still in there unresolved, but we can leave it behind as dealt with. So we transcend that. We become transformed. So all humans can immediately become transformed from the upset state of the human condition. And it is to some degree artificial, because you're just leaving it behind unaddressed, right? So that's what generations in the immediate present have to do to cope with the human condition, or can do and should do to cope with the human condition. That it will take generations to actually ameliorate and heal it through therapy all the upset in humans. Now, that's the overall truth. But what's going to happen is a lot of people, especially those with extreme upset, are going to want to try to get that under control. So there will be a big industry dedicated to therapy, to trying to help the more upset at least get their upset under control, their psychosis and neurosis under control. And it's going to be a huge industry. And because it's almost impossible to be effective if you're too crippled by your psychosis. So extreme psychosis, people will want to go into treatment and have it. And there'll be a lot of people dedicated to doing it. And then all these things like acupuncture and physio key and tapping especially are going to become incredibly popular. And there's going to be people very good at using them. So the therapy is going to be big business. It's going to be one of the biggest. It won't be businesses in terms of money-making enterprises, but it'll be one of the biggest activities being practiced in the new human condition resolved world that's coming. And one of the most powerful healing tools or therapy forms of therapy will be this tapping. Because it's so effective in opening a sort of, as it were, a doorway into our repressed and hurt self, and allowing those repressed feelings to come up and our adult self to be able to deal with them and make sense of them and heal them. And saying that our adult self is very significant, and this is why. It's mostly during our childhood, the first 6 years almost of our life, where most of all the upset that's in the world causes its greatest devastation to us, to our soul being our original instinctive self or child within. Now, as I've explained in my books, the human race has never been able to admit that humanity once lived in a cooperative, loving, harmonious state, as the bonobos are living in now, and that they developed that through nurturing. Because until we could explain why we spoilt such a magic place, destroyed paradise, as it were, while we couldn't defend our loss of innocence, our departure from the Garden of Eden, however we like to describe it, it was an unbearable truth to face. So the way we cope with that was to pretend that no, our ancestors were brutish and savage, aggressive, and we've got savage instincts like lions and other animals, which as I explained in all my material, is absolute rubbish, because we have a cooperative, loving, moral soul, an altruistic moral soul. So we obviously once lived in a cooperative, loving state. So we've been living in denial that humanity's once lived beautifully in a lovely, beautiful, happy, cooperative, sensitive, all-loving, all-sensitive state. Now that we can admit that, now that we can defend our loss of innocence and explain that, we can afford to admit that truth, that we were once incredibly loving and what innocence is really like. Now, what's significant about that is when children come into the world, they come in our, more or less in our original instinctive state of expectation of encountering a loving, cooperative world like it always was, and suddenly it isn't. It's this massively angry, egocentric, and alienated, upset world that they're encountering. So it's incredibly distressing to children to encounter that world, which is why when they finally start thinking about it, the philosophy of our condition when they're about 12 or 13, they go through resignation, all that horror, because they can't. But this is the most damaging thing that happens to children, because they're so trusting in that the world is cooperative and loving. When things go wrong, badly wrong, and they're ill-treated during, basically when they encounter the extremely upset, egocentric world in the case of men, and alienated, neurotic world of women, that it's incredible distressing interaction for them. Now, what children tend to do is they tend to blame themselves. And this is what's so devastating. You see, because they are so trusting, our soul is so sensitive and so loving, that when things go wrong, children, in all their incredible naive honesty, think, well, it's either them that's wrong or it's me that's wrong, because they're so trusting they cannot believe the adults, the more mature, the established people are in the wrong. It has to be their mistake. So it's a measure of just how trusting children are that they end up blaming themselves. And they blame themselves very easily. Now watch this. This is really important. When they get to that conclusion that it's their fault, and as I said, it's ridiculously easy how quickly they'll blame themselves. But when they make that realization, then their honesty kicks in again and they say, well, I shouldn't exist on this earth if I'm that bad, if I'm that evil. Again, you've got to understand just how innocent our soul is, our original instinctive child within is. So when we are a child, we're living in this idealistic expectations world. And it's not like that. And it's devastating. And the adults can't even admit they're alienated and upset because they can't defend it. So they pretend they're not. They're laughing and acting confidently. And it's incredibly bluffing. Children are codependent to adults. Codependent means incapable of independent action. You look it up in the dictionary. They're codependent. They can't think independently and realize that it's not their fault. It's the parents' fault or the world that they've grown up in fault. They can't help but blame themselves. They're codependent, incapable of being independent of that conclusion, of being adult, as it were, about the world. Adults, of course, know the world's not perfect, so everything. It's all self-evident to them that the world's not perfect. But for children, it's a massive problem. And if a lot of hurt happens, then they can blame themselves. And when they blame themselves, the next thing is they conclude that therefore they shouldn't exist, that they're monsters. And when they come to that conclusion, that is such a terrifying conclusion for children, for infants and children, that they can't live with that truth, and they immediately have to split off from it, separate themselves from it, because they cannot deal with that they shouldn't exist. And so what they do when they split off from that, they departmentalize, like as I mentioned earlier, that whole issue of that they're evil. And then they create a mechanical life to live in. They're living in this surface, superficial existence because they don't want to go near that issue. And it's like what happens at resignation. Everyone tries to understand the human condition, and being no understanding why they're not perfect, they block that off. So that's a separating off from the soulful truth as well. But children do it in a different sort of way. This is a much earlier time in their life, in their infants and young children, and they can blame themselves, and then they split from that conclusion because it's too unbearable to live with. So thereafter, they're living an artificial mechanical life, just making do, just getting by, just not dealing with anything deep. And they create this totally mechanical existence for themselves. But it's a dysfunctional life and a superficial life. So what happens for those of us who are unlucky enough to encounter the human condition in the extreme? Because it's an outright raffle. Everybody's variously upset in the world. That's an unavoidable reality of this heroic journey that humanity's been on. But obviously, some people are lucky and escape encountering that horror, the full horror of that battle, like I was lucky enough to do. And other people are unlucky enough to be born in the midst of it and suffer enormously. Now, so what I'm saying is that when the human race now has finally found the redeeming understanding that will heal all its psychosis, but that will take generations to heal the whole human race. In the meantime, we don't need to. We know that the battle's won, so we just give up all that upset behavior, leave it behind us and transcend it, and just live for this new world, this human condition resolved new world, and support that, and that we can be part of the human of a human condition free world by doing that. So we just put our upset in a suitcase and move on. But in general, we won't be trying to therapize ourselves, given it's just going to be too preoccupying and take too long, and we can't achieve much in our lifetime. But those, as I said, those people who are extremely upset, which are the ones that I've encountered, especially these children who are split off from their true self and develop an extreme psychosis and become extremely, there's underneath them is this hidden stress that keeps bubbling up and expressing itself. There's feelings that are coming up, and they're all coming from this distressed childhood state, this unresolved issue that they're evil, and this fear that they're bad and they shouldn't exist, that this dark shadow that's plaguing them, and that shadow is the fear that they shouldn't exist. So that's the most destructive and hurtful and psychosis. And those people suffering from that are really going to want to try to make some improvement on that, try to help that to some degree in the new world, new human condition resolved world that's coming. And that's understandable. And if they can make some help, so there will be a big industry trying to help those more extremely in suffering that I've just described. And tapping is a very powerful tool because it opens these highways, these pathways, and allows the body allows the feelings to express itself. Tapping is a two-way street. It's like an open doorway. Any form of acupuncture or scanner or whatever, physio key, does that. It opens up these pathways so all the energies can start to work and feelings can finally come up. But also the adult understandings that the world isn't perfect, that the children didn't have when they were so young and vulnerable, can flood down from the top. So if I draw a picture, you've got the adult and you've got that child, and the child's all hunched over and with his arms around his legs in distress. So there is this child that's got this repressed trauma in its system. And what happens as the child grows up with that trauma is it infects the whole body. It floods the whole body with the trauma. So just under the surface is this trauma that's crippling the life of the individual, right? Now, the adult actually knows, once you become an adult, that the child wasn't evil and is fundamentally good, because they, just through the experience of living with on Earth, where you get to understand that the world isn't perfect, that all sorts of, and even though prior to having understanding of the human condition, there was a deep intuition that there would be we one day find the understanding of why this trauma, we aren't fundamentally evil, that no human is fundamentally bad or evil. And so the adult does have an overview of life that allows it to understand that what the child was deceived into believing, it has a misreading that it was evil, isn't true. But the problem is these red arrows. This has been living, you've been living your whole life with this trauma. It's been infecting your whole being. And every day it's been there, this sort of subliminal terror. And you've lived with it, and you actually become, it floods your whole life. You actually become unable to free yourself from it. Because it's just infecting your whole life. It's just under the surface, right? So even though the adult knows that it's not that the child wasn't at fault, it can't reach the child because the child is split off from that. So if you were to do it's called primal therapy. In a primal therapy, you go into sessions where you gradually work your way back. They ask you questions and you say, I've got this feeling coming. I say, where's that coming from? And you talk a bit about that. And gradually they work your way back and try to make contact with this child, because until you can reach that child and its trauma, you can't get it to renegotiate its fear, unlock the fear. So that's primal therapy. It's all about trying to help someone work their way back through all the layers of block out and denial to finally reconnect with the child and basically break in on the child and say, you were wrong, you weren't evil, you're a wonderful person, and the child can finally breathe easily. Now that's primal therapy, is trying to work down like that. But that takes a lot to do. The beauty of tapping and physiocare and stuff like that is that it's a tool that opens these locked up pathways and lets these feelings come up, and then the adult can be interact with those feelings and feed back down the true understanding towards the child and relieve the misreading, right? So if you can open this locked up and let the feelings come up, and feelings are only expressions of the deeper trauma. They're the outward sort of expressions that you've got this anxiety, you know, and if you tap on that anxiety, it'll start to express itself more, and the adult will start to make more connection with that trauma, and some healing will take place. So tapping can be a very effective way of opening the door. It's to two ways. It allows the feelings to come up and access them, begin to come up, and it allows the adult's understanding of that the world was never supposed to be that perfect to filter down, and you get this healing effect. You get this therapy happening. Now, and this is really, really, really important. That's all straightforward. Psychiatry is not rocket science. It's just simple. Once you accept that humans were once innocent and they no longer are, and they had this horrific, heroic battle to participate in, which led them all to become immensely angry, egocentric, and alienated, then you can understand that we've got this magic child within us, and we brutalized it, and every generation has to catch up to the level of upset that's now established on Earth. And so you come in for a very upset stage in the human journey, which is now, and the world's going to be incredibly distressful for the child. And it's going to be incredibly hurt by the degree of wrongness in the world, seeming wrongness, because we now know it's not actually wrong. There's a reason for our upset behavior. So good therapy, like really well-managed primal therapy, or really well-managed tapping or scanner treatment, will manage open this this doorway of opening the feelings to come up, and the adult to integrate with them, and to get amelioration. Amelioration means kind of making peace, so the two parties sort of reconciled, and you get this healing effect taking place, and the trauma subsides, and more the adult comes in. But this is the important point I wanted to make. When you start tapping on the repressed feelings, in other words, the pain, those feelings that come up can be very powerful and overwhelming. And which makes sense, because there's a lot of pain down here. This child was incredibly innocent. The human race was once incredibly innocent. So the wrongness of the adult world is incredibly hurtful to the innocent child. I mean, now that we can understand how innocent the human race once was, everyone, all parents are going to be super conscientious and aware now of the importance of being a loving parent and so on, and trying to give them, protect them from all the mess in the world and hurt and pain, because we now can acknowledge just how vulnerable children are. But all within the under the umbrella that the human race has had to be upset to get where it got to. It's a good thing. It's a heroic state to be upset. So no one's ashamed of being upset anymore. So, but the whole business of nurturing now can gain enormous importance, because again, the battle's won. We don't long have to go on with the battle. Everyone takes up nurturing and try to help children, the next generation, to come out as nurtured as we can. So there's a huge change of direction from children becoming even more butchered by the second. Over the last 20 years, the amount of alienation that's increasing is just skyrocketing. We're getting this snowflake generation. We're getting children, a whole generation, the Y generation, Z generation, whatever you call them, you know, they're just about paralyzed with pain. And that's the end, the terminal end, terminal alienation is upon us. So this understanding of the human condition has only come just in time. So there's basically a whole generation, all generations from here on until this understanding gets out there, that are going to be almost crippled to the quick, almost totally crippled, and needing help a lot. So they need what I'm talking about a lot. But there's something that's very important, and that is that when you start therapy, it can make things worse, because it can let all the trauma out, and then you become flooded and overwhelmed with trauma and feel, God, I wish I'd never started therapy, right? So you can get to this situation quite easily where you wish you never started therapy, because it's just made things worse, because you've opened the floodgates, as it were, and all the repressed feelings are coming up, and there's not enough time, as it in effect, for the integration of this material that's coming up to happen, to ameliorate it, to absorb it, to adjust to it, to integrate it into your whole understanding and feeling system. So how do we manage that? Now, this is the key question, right? If we look at this diagram again, you've got two things happening. You've got the trauma from the childhood situation flooding up, and you've got the mature adult awareness of the world flooding down, trying to stop it or ameliorate it. Obviously, if this become, if the red becomes excessive and the green not strong enough, then you're in trouble of getting swamped, flooded, overwhelmed by psychosis, by trauma, right? And then you will feel, I better put in the floodgates, shutting this wall off again, not dealing with it. Not allowing it up, not encouraging it to come up and yell and scream, you know? I mean, in primal therapy, when you really get it, it's called the primal scream. Janoff called it, the great psychoanalyst Janoff described it as his book. It's called the primal scream, because when you finally get in touch with this and you connect with just how traumatized that child was when it believed that it was evil, it screams. And so they have these padded rooms where people doing primal therapy start screaming because they've made contact with the enormity of the misreading, of the pain of the misreading of the child, that it's evil and that it's blamed itself. This thing about child blaming themselves is explained in Freedom in paragraph 988. And how we acquired our unconditionally selfless, loving, moral soul through nurturing is explained in chapter 5 of Freedom. Anyway, so so this stuff can become, coming up can be overwhelming if it's not managed really well. And what is the key to management of this? This is what I want to talk about. Obviously, given these two directions, if the red's too strong, you're in trouble. The green has to be really strong. That's the obvious. As I said, psychiatry is not rocket science. Once you understand the elements, we've got this innocent child within us, and then we're living in this massively upset state, everything makes sense. Psych means soul, psychotic, so we're psychotic, we've got a hurt soul, neurotic, neuron means nerve. Neurosis means the mind's preoccupied with blocking out, so that's a neurotic state to block out our, to maintain that cutoff. So there's neurosis and psychosis involved. It all makes sense. These two elements, this instinctive child within and intellectual self, you've got neurosis and psychosis. But anyway, sorry, this coming down is not neurosis. This is talking about the adult understanding. Now, what this adult understanding is actually doing is parenting the child. And it's this parenting aspect that's so important in therapy, that the adult takes a parenting role. And it's very hard to do because this trauma has been infecting your life since you're a baby and whatever, or a child, and it's got a huge hold on you. It's your dominant state. So to suddenly become calm and reassuring and trusting for the child within, so that it's calm, it calms down, is not easy to do because you're flooded with this, habituated with this terror. But that's the trick. You have to be nurturing of the child to help it cope. If you can meet this flood of trauma with a flood, as it were, of love, then the child will cope and you will cope. But it's so easy if you're in a state of, you get frustrated with these pains and you start actually adding to the denial of them and trying to push them down and attack them, the child is going to be more traumatized. So you're getting nowhere. The whole thing will just mess up in a big angry state of distress and frustrated state and hurt state, not necessarily just angry. It's so important that you're able to parent the trauma that's coming up with calm, secure, trusting love. That is the secret. And that's not easy to do, to become that, to become that parent, that calm parent. Every mother knows if her child is in trauma and distress, that to help it, she must be calm and reassuring. So if she can adapt a calm and reassuring demeanor, the child will calm down. So it's about being a good parent in having this loving and compassionate state of mind for the parent. So you've got to occupy, the parent has to occupy that state of mind. It's not easy because it's actually habituated to being in trauma and subconsciously distressed. So it's hard to separate that from that and become the secure adult that you'd like to be. Very interesting to watch Cesar Millan, who's the great dog whisperer, helping people with distressed dogs. And he walks into their house, and you can see it every nearly every show, because he's got these TV series. He does it nearly every show. He comes in, and he starts talking. He introduces himself, and they introduce themselves, and then they say, here's Snippet, and they meet the dog, and Snippet's, you know, an angry, ferocious little Weimaraner, whatever sort of dog. He's got some, anyway, and Caesar says, oh, right, so this looks terrible. So, and then they say, look, this is where Snippet bit me the other day, and he bit the postman, and it's just, we don't know what to do. We're in an absolute tangle about what to do with Snippet. So you see Caesar, he's actually saying, oh, it talks about the dog. Oh, show me Snippet. Oh, right, Snippet. But actually, if you watch enough shows, he's not interested in the dog. He's watching the parent. He's watching the owners. Because he's learned that, see, dogs are not like humans. They live in, they're not coming from a loving, cooperative state. They're coming from a highly competitive, must reproduce state where dominance hierarchy is everything. And dominance hierarchy is what gives other animal species, non-humans and non bonobo species, the ability to live together to some degree, to be social. Because in a dominance hierarchy, everyone sort of wrestles with each other, and whoever is the strongest becomes the dominant, and then you get this peck order of who's, there's only ever a war or a battle when someone wants to move up the peck order. Otherwise, it's peace. So you walk into a chook house, everything's peaceful, but I remember seeing a chook twist a leg, and suddenly all the other chooks are on top because that's their opportunity to move up the peck order. So suddenly at that moment, you realize they're all under stress. They're all trying to move up the peck order. But so dominance hierarchy is what keeps social animals in some sort of a state of peace. And what happens with humans is they try to love the dogs because that's the way we became cooperative through nurturing. They try to nurture the dogs, and that doesn't work. Dogs want dominance. They want to be slotted into a hierarchy, and then they'll find some peace. And while you keep trying to love them, instead of you're letting the dog believe that it's the dominant one, and it's not up to it, it'll become a raging lunatic. And Caesar knows all this, subconsciously at least. And he knows he's got to establish dominance. And so he's looking at the owners of the dog, and he sees that they really haven't got any control over the dog. They've got no self-belief. They're not carrying themselves with any kind of belief and sense of strength. So you'll see him, he'll take right. He says, come over here, Mrs. Jones. And he says, right. And he pulls his shoulders back. And says, pull your head up, stand up straight. Now I want you to walk across the room in front of Snippet, looking like you own the world and you're able and confident and in control. And when Snippet starts jumping up to you, wanting the usual smothering of supposed affection, you've just got to maintain your demeanor and focus on your center core strength and see what happens. And Mrs. Jones does that. And blow me down if Snippet doesn't absolutely fall in line and is calm, and they think it's a miracle. It's like that. The child isn't suffering from dominance hierarchy being given, not given any framework to live within. It's suffering from the similar but an equivalent situation where it needs a strong, calm, assuring adult to calm it down. And as I said, all parents know, all mothers know that if the child is distressed, you have to be calm and reassuring. Now, what I'm saying, I honestly believe that anybody listening to this won't really appreciate what I'm saying. It's just too hard to appreciate just how difficult it is to become that, to not be infected. People involved in therapy, I know a lot of them, people who have, because you know, we've got 50 founding members, and they're people I've grown up with and know. They're like brothers and sisters to me, and sure enough, there's a significant proportion of them. They've got no different to any group of people in society who've got lots of distress, and they're trying to deal with that, and I'm trying to help them with that. And they're using tapping, for example, and they're experiencing these problems. And it's not easy for them to adopt this. They know when they can do it, everything starts to work. The child is incredibly responsive to this love. Instead of being denied and get out, you know, I'm sick of you, and you just make my life a misery and push you away, you change your attitude and be loving and accepting of the child and say, I'm here for you. I'm here for you. Actually tap on those words. I'm here for you. I love you. I'm sorry I've been dismissive of you and even pushed you away. I want to help you and be here for you. People cannot believe that. It's like a miracle that they actually find that they're actually talking to the hurt child within them. That's how relieving it is, finally to show up. It's as if the child's been there waiting all his life for the adult to come down and help them and rescue them. And suddenly the cavalry's arrived. And honestly, the child comes out and receives this love like you wouldn't believe. It's so therapeutic. It's incredibly effective. But it's so hard to do, to become... People think... What happens is they think, look, I'm definitely inhabiting this calm, secure state of mind. But what they realize a few days later, I really wasn't. I was still infected by, I was still owned by the frustration and I was still flooded with the trauma in my system. I wasn't trauma free. I was still basically living in a state of trauma. I wasn't living in a state of calm, centeredness and security. So it's not easy to become that. And so to try to make my point, I predict that when this industry of therapy begins in earnest in this human condition resolved new world, one of the greatest skills that's going to be taught is how to be a parent to the hurt child within us. And that's not easy. It requires what we call 100% rule. You cannot afford to drop back into being frustrated and troubled. You have to be living in that calm state all the time, 100% of the time. If you can stay in that calm state, enormous therapy will take place. But if you lose it and start getting infected with this historic, habituated frustration, then your therapy will founder. And you'll very quickly get into a situation where you'll feel that I wish I'd never started therapy. So this parenting aspect of therapy is just critical. And it's totally legitimate, because you have to understand this child, that state is a misreading that it's a bad person. So that's a lie, and the adult world knows that that's a lie. So the adult's in charge of truth. So this is truth flooding down here, and this is lies flooding up. So truth has to win over lies. It's the same equation that the whole human race is now in, now that we've found understanding of the human condition. It's under the historic fear that the human race is all bad, that we're evil, should have been thrown out of the Garden of Eden, banished, that we're fundamentally bad. That's been the whole insecurity of the human condition. But now that we can understand that, we understand that that's a lie. We've found the defense for ourselves. So the defense which is the truth that we are good and not bad, has to replace the lie that we are bad. And that has to win out over that misreading. And that's the big turnaround for the human race. And when we start flooding the world with love, understanding of ourselves and each other, then the trauma will be subsided. It's the same equation. So the whole human race is under therapy now, is in therapy now, because the truth, which we are good and not bad, is able to replace the lie that we are bad, that caused us so much pain and suffering. All our upset, angry, and egocentricity behavior are all a result of that misreading that we're bad. We blocked out the criticism, that's alienation. We attacked the criticism, that's anger. And we tried to prove it wrong by getting wins all the time, so we're egocentric. They're all responses to feeling that we're bad, to not knowing, to being insecure, to not knowing that whether we're good or not. But now we know we're good from first principle biology, so we can replace all that misunderstanding with love. And that will flood through us and heal everything and make sense, and the therapy will start spreading across the world. What I've been talking about is just a personal situation where this pain is in the extreme, how it works. And it's the same thing. We can parent the whole human race now with love because we've found love, i.e. understanding. And in this equation, when you've got and you're tapping and stuff's coming up, you need to be able to stay in this place where you're secure and trusting and loving and calm. If you're in that state, you can practice therapy and it'll be very effective. If you're not in that space, as I said, it's very hard to maintain. And you'll continually find that you've been falling for the old habits of being angry towards yourself and frustrated and upset and not in a loving state of mind at all, and so. That has to be changed, and that's not easy to change. But when you teach yourself, it's just the same as when you become transformed. When you become transformed, you leave one way of thinking behind and adopt another. This is the same. It requires the same. It's the same difficulty and the same solution. You've got to leave that behind and take up this state where you now trust in yourself and in the world, and you're holding on to the truth that the child within you is good and not bad, and the healing will be effective. Without it, it won't be effective. So that's just a very simple outline of therapy, psychological therapy, how it all works. It's not rocket science. It all makes sense. But they're the raw description of the principles involved in therapy.